cliffcentral.com.
Oh yeah, the 90s. The 90s were cool. Only with you hear songs like this. And then you get like the ugly 90s.
What are the ugly 90s?
Well, you get like a lot of crap music in the 90s as well. But Sheryl Crow was kind of cool. Her only mistake
was it was a giant one. Armstrong.
Yes, well done, yeah. You get everything in one.
I knew you were going to go down that road.
Yeah. So, I mean, she had a great career. She has still has great songs. When you listen to that, you realize like she was very, very cool. But yeah, the Lance Armstrong blip will always be a blip.
It was quite a massive one.
Yeah, but no one's perfect. Least of all Sheryl Crow. Right, so Justice Malala is on his way. But I need to remind you that you can win a great prize here with the Gareth Cliff Show here on Cliff Central because we can send you the box.
Oh.
Ah.
Right, so last month we had a winner from Cape Town, I think she was. So she received the box. And this month's box, well, it's going to be as unique as the last month. So basically, you'll get once-in-a-lifetime items from me, Sia, Mavali, Gareth, and whoever else is willing to just put stuff in this box. So send me the box is the hashtag, right?
Yep.
This is what you need to share with us on social media. And the whole mechanic is that we want to see you kind of getting other people involved, listening to us in the morning, getting involved in the channel, and obviously enjoying what we do here on Cliff Central. So go onto your favorite social media where you interact with us here at Cliff Central, and with the hashtag send me the box, just show us what who you're spreading the gospel to, so to speak. And if we like your entry, and Dory, who is in charge of the content here on the site, she is the person who makes the decision. So don't be tweeting us saying, ah, Sia, Arma Bali, please can I have the box? I love you so much, blah, blah, blah. Because we get a lot of those. We don't hate those. It's quite good some days. We need that kind of stuff. But Dory is the independent adjudicator on this.
Wow. So she has a very formal title.
It is.
Independent adjudicator.
Independent adjudicator.
Wowzers.
And you can get the box if you maybe impress Dory with that. So send me the box, the hashtag. Get going with that. We now need to get going with the burning platform brought to you by Nando's with Justice Malala.
Mm-hmm. Hello. Hello.
Seamless.
Good morning.
Huh?
Good morning.
Seamless. Hey, what's the music?
There, you just made it.
Yes. That's right, Justice. You have to demand what you're.
We were setting you up.
That's it.
No, Justice, I was thinking about this. I like Thursday because we're close to the weekend and because you come into studio. But I got to the point now where I liken your arrival to being broken up with a girlfriend. It's like you look forward to seeing the person, but then what they say isn't what you want to hear a lot of the time. And as much as you try to put a positive spin on things, some of the news at the moment is rather, let's just say, unsettling. It's not what you want to hear sometimes.
Maybe we should do a whole new thing with the show, and make it a bit of a. I don't know, like, you know, see, hold hands and
kumbaya
and,
yes.
You know, and
console ourselves every Thursday.
Yeah, but we can't be burying our heads in the sand either.
Yeah, exactly.
So I mean, let's all put our big boy and big girl pants and panties on.
See, this is why we have my belly in our life, yes, just to make us go through the hard times.
Well, I mean, I for one, Justice, would like to know why I, as a South African, am getting poorer by the day. And you are one of the very few people who can explain this to me and everybody else who's feeling it. Why are we getting poorer as South Africans?
Look, I think one of the things we're not doing is talking about... So over the past few weeks, we've been talking about it's a recession.
Yes.
We've been talking about, and I'm sure Anthea has spoken long and I'm sure very expertly about it. We don't talk about, we talk about the ratings agencies, and it's all Fitch and Moody's, they're terrible and so forth. And, you know, we bang on and go on about all that. But one of the things... One of the things we don't stop and do is what's going on here. And what's going on here is that all these numbers have a direct impact on our pockets. So when we say we are in junk status, when we say that We are in a recession. In a recession, it means that the economy has not grown for two quarters. That means that for two quarters, jobs haven't been created. There isn't more money in the system. That as prices go up and you have to buy for those big boy pants you were saying all of us should go out and get now, it's more expensive. So everything is more expensive. So we say it's a recession, and it's a lovely word, and you know, everyone's talking about it. But essentially, you're getting poorer and things are getting more expensive in South Africa. And it's all because of one thing. It's all because of politics. So if you ask any economist, why are we being downgraded? Why are we junk? Why is there a recession? They say the politics are stopping people from coming to South Africa and starting or increasing their businesses here. This is the fundamental truth of what's going on. Our politics are so dirty, so depressing, as Ben has pointed out, that people are saying, you know what, I'm going to hold off a bit. Because people want to be in South Africa. In South Africa, you can make money. You can, you know, charge higher prices than many other places. You can do this and so forth. People want to start businesses here. They think it's great. But now they're saying, oh, well, if Jacob Zuma stays, will things remain as hard as they are in South Africa and so forth and so forth? And they're saying, oh, you know what, I'll put my money in Japan or Germany or, you know, elsewhere. But let me hold off on South Africa. They're not saying South Africa is bad. They're saying, I'm not sure where it's going, the way its politics are. So all these numbers keep on coming out. So one of the most interesting ones came out last Thursday, I think, and it was the Business Bureau of Economic Research Business Confidence Index. And basically, that index says that business people are more depressed today than they've ever been in the past 8-9 years. They were this depressed in 2008 when the world economy imploded, when America, the US, had banks collapsing due to the financial implosion that happened with bonds and mortgages then. They haven't been as depressed as they have been since then. And so what you face, and all of them are asked what's going on, they say the political climate makes it hard to operate in South Africa because there's no certainty. We don't know what's going to happen next. Is Malusi Gigaba going to be the right person for the job or not? Is Pravin going to be fired? What's going to happen with this? So it's, I don't know what to do. Is there a way that I can invest in Nigeria or Tanzania? They're all thinking maybe the place to diversify to is the rest of the continent or elsewhere in the world. And that's a fundamental problem. If CS running a business, you want him to say, you know what, I'm going to do something in Hammanskraal, in Phuthaditjhaba, yes, or somewhere. Not say, oh, you know, maybe I'll make it safer to do business in Botswana or in Mozambique. And that's the fundamental problem.
So, Justice, when you talk about business being depressed and affected by the politics, are you talking about all business? So from the small guy with his startup to small, medium enterprises, all the way up to the big conglomerates, or are you only specifically referring to big business being affected?
The Bureau of Economic Research does what you'd call formal business. But think about me and Sia saying we're going to start a small construction business, and we get all excited and let's meet after the show, let's have a coffee, and we go have a coffee, we open our laptop, oh yeah, there's opportunities there, oh, there's a road being tarred, maybe we can go and, you know, put in a tender and we'll see what happens, because, you know, we are young civil engineers and da da da, and within 30 minutes Sia's gonna say, oops, Justice, but you know, we are not connected to so and so. And so how are we going to get that job? Do we need to know somebody who knows somebody who knows somebody? So we might not be taking the temperature of those business people. But I think if you look at the state of entrepreneurship in South Africa, I think many, many people are saying, oh, you know what? I'll go look for a job instead of I will start jobs for others and I will make money doing it. And that's fundamentally wrong. Sia and I should be saying, well, I'm not as young, I think. But Sia should be saying, jeepers, what do I have to lose? I'm 24 years old. I can go do this and do that and so forth and so forth. But is he doing that, or is he saying, you know what, I'm going to dust up my CV and I'm going to try and work at a construction company rather than start my own? Because, well, what's the safety net for him if he does that? And
it's so sad, like, because you get new ideas, new energy when new people come to the market, so to speak. Like, that's how we evolve.
That's how great countries are made, that people believe that if I do this, I have a fair chance at getting there. But right now, I mean, you know, that speaks to a societal problem. If you think about just last night and to this morning, there are meter taxi drivers attacking Uber drivers in Tshwane, in Sunnyside. There are meter taxi drivers attempting to blockade the roads in the east of Joburg. There are people who are illegally trying to connect up to the electricity grid in Mamelodi, who are now threatening to burn the houses of formal bondholders who have houses, because they're saying, well, don't try to stop us doing this. It's our right to steal the electricity. So there's this sense of lawlessness that I can do whatever I like. And so I think part of the problem we have to discuss, sadly, I don't think the discussion is taking place, is where does that come from? When people think I can get away with it, I think it starts at the top.
Sure.
I think the fact that our political leadership, it seems to me, can get away with whatever, means that for the rest of society, it starts being, oh, well, you know what? If Sia and I can't start our business, maybe we should just go steal. We'll get away with it, because the Guptas are not going to jail. The Zumas are not going to jail. No one goes to jail. There is no consequence. One of the saddest numbers that you know, talking about numbers, Mabali, that you'll hear was yesterday when the municipal audit was released by Kimi Makweti, the Auditor General. There are 249 municipalities that these young, bright accountants, our accountants as a government, ran around, went and checked. Oh, how are your finances looking? What do you do when you want to tar the road from A to B? You sign off, you pay them, and you keep records. Out of those 249, I think I need to check my numbers because I didn't write them down, but I think less than 50 got a clean audit.
Wow.
It means that the other guys, there is no paperwork. So money has been spent, okay? Money has been spent. It's all gone. But no one, it's here. Why did we pay justice? Or maybe we don't even know that we pay justice 50 million rand. But the money's finished. Yeah. Where's the paperwork? So the bright young accountant arrives looking, oh, yeah. Let's see how you spend the money. Oh, it's great that you tarred the road. Sometimes the road hasn't been tarred.
But the money's gone.
So, you know, this week you saw an extraordinary thing. The Deputy Minister of Arts and Culture went to Brandfort, went to the house where Winnie Mandela was banished during apartheid. This is a place that was supposed to be turned into a heritage site where tourists could go and see and say, this is the place where the apartheid government sent Winnie Mandela to live on her own. She was banished. She wasn't allowed to speak to people. She could only speak to one person at a time. It was a terrible thing. Yeah. Now, if you go to Amsterdam, you can go to the house where Anne Frank hid from the Nazis. If you go, many parts of the world, we've done this before. Humanity's done this, where it's like, you know, Sia was suffered under apartheid. He was banished and so forth. This is the house. People can go and see what life was like under this thing. So the Free State government, you know, opened up tenders. Money was spent, but the house is still a total wreck. It's being used by criminals. Mm-hmm. People go and have sex in it. They go and hide in it and drink and, you know, put up what all sorts of things. It's a shame. It's an absolute scandal. But one of the extraordinary things is that the deputy minister goes there. There's two officials, senior officials from the Free State government, and she's angry and says, "Where's the, you know, people say we need money to do this, but we've spent, I think, upwards of R1 million, and where is it? What's happened here?" But no one is going to go to jail. That money was paid. Not. Imagine the money was paid. It went from Sia's account into my account. That our justice is going to do the, I don't know, the roof or whatever, the rehabilitated or whatever. But I'm not going to go to jail. It's so I think when you have impunity at the top, you'll have impunity at the bottom. And that is where we are. The guy in the Free State is not shivering right now saying, Yo, the deputy minister was here, there'll be criminal charges laid, all that. No. Because, well, you know, you can buy a house in Dubai and nothing happens and no one says we need to find out where the money came from and how it left the country legally or illegally and so forth. So if people can get away with that, why should the guy in the Free State worry about a little 1 million rand that went from the Free State account into his account and he didn't do any work whatsoever?
But this is what I find so frustrating, is that because you get like these new norms that kind of happen, right? So this wasn't the case at some stage, and then a few things became like this happened, and now it's like the norm. Like, does this stuff ever get sort of discussed in parliament, or is this too hearsay for people's liking? Like, is this your opinion? This is how it is.
Well, it's how it is. I mean, this story, the story of the house, is an interesting one because it's been in the city press. It's been on television. It's all over. The deputy minister read about it and went there. And yet, surely the next step should take place, that criminal charges should be laid.
Well, someone should be fired at the very least.
At the very least, someone should
as
be
a starting
fired.
Point.
But no, she hasn't laid charges. It's, we'll find it. So in a way, for me, it's interesting. There are 4 parliamentary inquiries into state capture. So what are we doing with these parliamentary inquiries? What are they going to do? Why isn't criminal charges being investigated by the Hawks? But will the Hawks do it when essentially they've become a wing of the union buildings and they cannot, they don't seem to want to investigate people? Unless those people are not connected to certain factions in the ANC. So sadly, I mean, it becomes a norm, but it becomes a norm because we've allowed it to become a norm. And it keeps on going on.
But it's an interesting point because, like you say, it's the crippling effects of politics. It becomes like this cancer which then just spreads, and ultimately you get these terminal situations.
Ben, you're taking me down the path you wanted to. You started with that. I'm like the guy who's been dumped.
It's stuff that we can't deny, though. Yeah. This is the whole thing. I mean, these are fundamentals. People think they're isolated stories a lot of the time.
No. For me, it's the culture. If that guy in Brandfort was going to jail, he would say, "Why am I going to jail if others are not going to jail for 1, 2, 3 at the very top?" A mine was sold to the Gupta family, and that mine, no one has been investigated. No one says anything. Tulima Dansala is seen as a tool of white monopoly capital for raising the issues that she raised in the State of Capture report. There's a fundamental problem here.
Okay, so enough about Tulima Dansala, please. We have a new public protector already.
I apologize.
Okay.
Yes.
Who had some very interesting things to say over the last couple of days.
Yes, indeed.
So what exactly is Busisiwe Mkhwebane trying to change within the constitution, and what kind of impact will that have if she gets the change that she wants?
Yeah, Mabale, you know, it's an interesting thing. So she's been very quiet for a long time,
yes.
But clearly she's been beavering away, working away, and on on Monday, I think it was, she released her report into the CIEX report. Basically, in the mid-80s, sanctions were biting. South Africa was spending a lot on shooting, detaining, killing young black kids in the townships. They were running out of money. The banks were running out of money. The country was in junk status. It was junk and junk. Basically, this was an administration that was in trouble. Bankop was in huge financial trouble, and if it went under, a lot of South Africans, largely white, were going to be bankrupted. So the Reserve Bank played its role and said, we will bail you out. We'll give you money so that you don't collapse, so that you can get yourselves on track. It's a bit like what happened with African Bank a few years ago when it nearly collapsed and the Reserve Bank stepped in and rescued it. So a lot of controversy continued about, was the money paid back? The money was paid back. The issue was, what was the interest on it? Because there are allegations one way or the other and so forth, and it's very complex. And I must say, I don't understand it enough. I must say that Tito Mboweni made the point that perhaps Busisiwe Mkhwebane didn't understand it enough, and that it was a little bit too complex for her, but he's not going to judge her for that. So you need to understand the genesis of this. So there are people in the world who are bounty hunters. They will say, oh, Ben is wanted by the Brazilian government.
See, we always come back to this.
And the Brazilian government says it will pay a ransom of 10 million rand for if we bring Ben to Brazil. So they'll hunt him down, find him, put him on a private jet, take him out of this country, probably legally, land him in Brazil and say, Baba, we've got him, here he is. And they'll get their 10 million. There are others in the 1990s who rushed off to Nelson Mandela and the head of the Secret Service at the time, Bilima Sehla, and say, there is money that's been stolen by the apartheid government between 1990 and 1994. As apartheid was falling apart, they stole money, took it overseas. We can find your money and we'll take 20% of whatever you get. These guys went there and said, look, this is some of the money and we can get it back for you and so forth. They promised a lot that, oh, you know, there's billions lying offshore and so forth and so forth. They still haven't produced those billions. There are lots of allegations and so forth, but nothing. With that Bankop loan, they said, look, the Reserve Bank didn't get all the money back. It should have gone and got the interest as well. And the interest turns out is 1.1 billion. Some people say it should be 2.2. Some say it's 1.2 and so forth and so forth. Now, Busisiwe Mkhwebane goes and does this and so forth. She gets lots of responses to her initial report, which was actually written before her, largely by Thuli Madonsela and people in her office. And she sits on it for the past 6-7 months. And releases this one. The first thing is to say, who did she consult and so forth? It turns out that in today's Mail and Guardian, or on the website, they're reporting that actually she went to someone who is a Holocaust denier, who has been running a campaign against the central bank, the Reserve Bank, and they're saying she listened to him, and he believes that, yes, the Reserve Bank is a terrible, horrible institution. It should be broken down. It's a remnant of the past and so forth and so forth. And he gave her his book and said, go read off. The second thing is, when she had written her report, she didn't take it to advocate Paul Hoffman, who initially laid this complaint and said, I think the government did not do enough to go and recover this money from APSA. Or APSA, or in fact Sanlam policyholders are the real beneficiaries of this thing. So go and get it. Mm. She didn't give it to him and say, this is the report, do you want to? She went to the Black First Land First movement run by Andy Lim Gritama and said, hi, Baba, here it is.
What does he have to do with it?
He has absolutely nothing to do. He there's a term that they used in the townships when you the train is moving, and you try to get on, you force the door open and you run alongside the train, and then you jump in. Waspara-para. It's like you're trying to be part of this thing when you know it's going. You're just jumping onto a train that's moving. So he found the train had moved, and it was convenient because he's got a big beef against the banks and the APSA in particular, and so he got on it. He's not a particular player in this issue, but he got the report before you, before we all saw it and got it. But there are strange things in there. So the first thing is that the Reserve Bank, APSA is taking it on review, so they're going to the High Court and saying this is wrong, she can't say this, she did not consider some of the things they had said. She also seems to have ignored the facts and come up with her own facts. So that will be interesting. APSA is jumping up and down and wants to go for it on this one. So that's going to be a big, big thing. But her biggest thing was that she then said that the mandate of the Reserve Bank needs to be changed to say that it needs to protect the socioeconomic rights of ordinary South Africans. At the moment, the mandate of the bank is to protect the currency, so to make sure that the rand doesn't become like the Zim dollar. You will remember the Zimbabweans always used to have these massive notes, and it would be there used to be, 100,000, maybe a million dollar Zim notes? Mm. I mean, they're crazy numbers like that. And that's because the currency had collapsed. You couldn't protect it. Inflation had ravaged it. It was, the value of that money was like your toilet paper. You couldn't do anything with a 100,000 or $1 million.
I don't know, toilet paper in Zim is quite valuable. Like just having it is quite special.
Okay.
I'm just saying.
Okay, let's find something else.
Different analogy.
Yes, thank you. That's why I'm here with you guys. You always pull me back from my enthusiasm. But basically, your currency collapses. The Reserve Bank has that mandate. But is it her place to tell us to change our constitution? Our constitution was written by the Constituent Assembly. If you want to change the constitution, you speak to your political party or your MP, and they then put a motion in parliament to try and change the constitution. So you'll remember 3 months ago, Julius Malema wanted to change Section 25 of the constitution. What did he do? In parliament, as an MP, he said, we want to change Section 25. Will the ANC vote with us to change Section 25? That's the property clause where Julius wanted to expropriate land without compensation. The vote was taken. The ANC said, no way, are we voting with you? And it was defeated. If Julius Malema had got a two-thirds majority, he could change the constitution. So the issue here is that our constitution starts with the words, we the people. We the people wrote the constitution, and we gave it we gave the Reserve Bank a mandate, and this is the way. And we gave the public protector a mandate. A constitutional body cannot go now and tell another constitutional body that no, this is what you need to do. Your work needs to be changed. It can be. So it seems as if she's taking on powers that she doesn't have. Now she wants to change that part of the constitution, and what else? You can't do that. The constitution can be changed by the people, and the representatives of the people have to have a two-thirds majority to do it. But this is something that the public protector seems to, it seems as if she just ignored it.
But now we go back to accountability, but like, so now what? She's made this move, but now...
Well, I mean, there are two things, really. So she puts that on the table. The Reserve Bank has already said it's going to challenge it. But think of the people who are saying, what are you smoking? The ANC. I've never seen the ANC issue a statement like this. Zizi Kotwa was on fire saying, how this is basic, he said. This is basic understanding of, I mean, Pierre DeForest, a professor of constitutional law at UCT, said, this is constitutional law 101. You don't even go there. You can't, it's like Jacob Zuma saying to Parliament, change the constitution. He knows that he has to win a two-thirds majority first. If the ANC has 62%, so... The ANC would need, if the ANC wanted to change that law, it would need to go to the EFF and say, we've got 62%, you've got 6%, how are we doing here? Oops, we're nearly there. And so let's work together and change the constitution. That's how you change the constitution. But you can't be told by a constitutional structure that you've got to change. The constitutional court can, even the constitutional court, interprets what we've already written, we the people. It doesn't say change it so that it can make me look good or whatever. Only we the people can tell our MPs that now it's time to change. That's the only way it works. So so you have this plethora of people. I suspect that Malusi Gigaba will come back from his London trip and say that National Treasury is also challenging her recommendation on this one. So I think she's going to end up with egg on her face, sadly, for her.
But is it egg on the face or just showing allegiance to number one? I mean, how important is it to keep doing these things?
Well, I think we all have to now consider carefully what is going on in the country. And what's going on is that there are two... I don't know how the ANC is going to come back from this, but what you have is institutions that are clearly connected to President Jacob Zuma and the Gupta family, and another part of our political structure, which is continuing as if we have a constitution and so forth. So the actions that we've spoken about by the public protector clearly point, her giving that report to Andile Mqitama before anyone else, her following on this Holocaust denier, essentially says she is clearly on one side, and that's the side of the Gupta family, and therefore the side of the Jacob Zuma family, which is deeply connected to the Gupta family. And therefore, that makes her part of a faction. We don't seem... I can't stand up now and say we have a public protector who is there for the people. It seems to me that she's there for a particular faction. If you look at what Museveni Zizwane did last week by unveiling a mining charter that sets new targets for BEE, and I don't have a problem actually with those new targets. He took them from 26 to 30%. But it was interesting that the one significant change in there is that he says BEE is now open for naturalized South Africans. That means that if you were born in England in 1970 and you moved to South Africa in 2005 and you got naturalized, now you were born in England where there was no apartheid, okay? You didn't suffer from apartheid. But you come to South Africa, you get your citizen, you become naturalized. Now you can go and start a BEE firm and enjoy the fruit of BEE. And why was that done? There is only one family which is enjoying the fruit of BEE already, and which now, with the new law, can go for it and enjoy the fruit of BEE. And that's the Gupta family.
Daily Maverick who referred to them as South Africa's first family. That's how they're being referred to by the Daily Maverick.
That just sounds like...
the first family. I like that, actually. No. I like that very much. So imagine you haven't... So see, a poor guy has suffered his whole life, you know, under apartheid. I mean, if you're 45.
Yes.
His whole life, you know, apartheid, you can't have this. You have to have a dump bus to go and you can't walk here. You can't sit here. You can't... Now, the aim of Black economic empowerment is to help reverse some of those horrible, the legacy of apartheid, the fact that you couldn't get the schooling that you wanted, that you didn't have the opportunity you wanted to go to university or to apply to the Minister of Education, all that crap. That's where BE comes in. But someone who's lived in India, when did colonialism end in India? 1948 with Mahatma Gandhi, I think, or early 50s. I can't remember the date anymore. But so you haven't suffered under apartheid, but now you're there. Oh no, I want to do a BEE deal. Sell me your mine for, you know, it's crazy.
Yeah.
So basically in South Africa, and the bigger political context is that there are people who are doing work for the Zuma and Gupta family and their allies, and there are people like your Gwede Mantashes and so forth who are trying to say, oh no, we're still doing things for the poor, the whoever of South Africa. But it's clear in cabinet, whether it's Msebenzi Zwane, whether it's Das van Rooyen, whether it's the new public protector, it points to one place, and that place is Sachsenwald, and that place is the Gupta family, and the chief of this sort of mafia gang, if you will, and I'm using the words of the South African Council of Churches, which said that we are becoming a mafia state under Jacob Zuma. The head of that mafia criminal gang points to being Jacob Zuma and those allies of his. So that's really where we are, and it's sad, but it's what it is.
Well, we are running out of time, but let's just, to wrap things up, let's just look at two things that are going to be happening today. Firstly, the president will be in parliament. He's going to be responding to his detractors on state capture issues. And then also the Constitutional Court is going to give their ruling on whether or not a secret ballot will happen. Mm. What is likely to happen today?
I mean, you know, Mabale, I wish we're having this conversation tomorrow. So 10 o'clock today, you'll see Advocate Dalimpofu, you'll see the EFF, you'll see Musi Maimane, all of them getting into that, into the Concord. It's going to be, what's the word you guys use?
Lit.
It's going to be lit, man.
It's going to be a lituation, a lit situation, Mr. Malala.
There you go. It's going to be a lituation. Because you know, you had all those arguments, so Dalimpofu, Nuka Itobi, all sorts of all these advocates arguing for and against the Constitutional Court making a ruling saying whether Parliament should vote, hold a secret ballot on this. What has been happening with the judiciary in South Africa is that there's been a lot of criticism that the judiciary now runs the country, that it tells politicians what to do. And I think people are not saying that it's because politicians have failed that now these things all go to the courts. But I think the Constitutional Court is going to be, that noise is going to be at the back of their minds as they make their decision. Will they rule that there be a secret ballot? I think one of the things we haven't spoken about is that actually this issue is not about the secret ballot proper. It's about Baleka Mbete saying, I don't have the powers to say this should be a secret ballot. And so they will be interpreting what's in the rules book of parliament. And I think they will find that actually Baleka Mbete can empower the MPs and the rule book, and she can take the decision to say, yes, it's a secret ballot or not a secret ballot. So they won't say, no, go back to parliament and have a secret ballot on President Zuma. They will say that the law allows you, Baleka Mbete, to make the decision. Go and make the decision. Huh. Now she can go back and say, we can't. Or she can go back and say, we can do this thing.
Yeah.
But I think it will be kicked back to her. But I'm not a lawyer. I'm not sure. You know, they were very complex arguments, but we'll see at 10 o'clock today. That lituation you talk about is going to be big. So if then it's kicked back to the speaker, she then has a big problem. Already she was found in the Nkandla matter not to have done the right thing by the constitution. And so she is now under pressure to do the right thing. Also remember that if there's a secret ballot and President Zuma is kicked out, she becomes the president for 30 days until we have a new president. So she could be a direct beneficiary of that kind of situation. But I think it will put more pressure on Jacob Zuma, actually, whatever happens, that he should go. This afternoon, don't expect a single straight answer from the president of South Africa.
Do we ever?
He will laugh at you, he will obfuscate, and he will say all kinds of things. But don't expect him to give you a straight answer on the state capture, on all the corruption, on all the issues that are going on. He hasn't done it for 8 years, and why should you expect it to happen today? But Sia, you're young, you're full of optimism and hope. So I want you to turn your telly on at 2 p.m. and wait for a straight answer.
Sucks.
Yeah. Right. That's what it is. But it's another, it's going to be another politically very, very heavy day with lots going on and lots of changes.
But a part of it is it's become entertainment now because the outcomes are very similar. They never really change, but the hope is always there.
No, actually, you know, I find it interesting. Parliament is becoming quite a place.
It looks like fun. We've always believed that.
The opposition parties have been making quite a lot of noise, and that's a good thing. The ANC MPs are becoming interesting people. You know, this show, for the past, how long have we been going now? 2 years? Year and a half?
Three.
Wow.
This is our third year.
Yeah, but Justice.
Happy birthday.
Let's talk about like our show with Justice.
Oh, you mean the Burning Platform? No, that's shorter. Sorry, none of us can count in this room, so don't look for a response to your question.
Okay. Yeah, I think it's about a year and a half. Maybe
a little over two, maybe. But
so, one of the things we've always spoken about, Saudi Motsweneng, and the ANC suddenly last year, after years of doing nothing, suddenly someone said, "Oops, what's that on the floor? Oh, it's my backbone," and they found it and they put it back in, and suddenly there was a special ad hoc committee on broadcasting and the SABC. Does anyone remember who was that chairman of the SABC? Maguve?
Prof Maguve.
Gareth
loved him.
Yeah.
Mbulaini
Maguve. Where is he today? Mm. He's gone. Where's that board? It's gone. There's an interim board. Where is Claudie Mutsuning, the man who said he's from the Free State, by the way, Maba?
Okay, thank you. Thanks for mentioning that every time, Justice.
I'm just putting it out there. Some very good people come from the Free State, by the way. We just have to find them. Anyway, so where is Claudie Mutsuning? He is fighting to... He's hanging on by a thread. I think he's been fired. He'll be fired again. Every time there's disciplinary hearings like nobody's business. All the people who propped him up while he was in power, there was a meeting at the SABC last week where they said, you didn't stand up for me when I was told to change a story and so forth and so forth. So I think Parliament is finding the ANC in parliament is finding its backbone in bits and pieces, but it might just surprise us down the line. And I think that when people realize that power is being lost, they begin to find their voices. And I think Jacob Zuma is under so much pressure that a lot of people are beginning to ask the question, am I sticking with this guy? What if he does go down?
Mm. It's just a shame that the voices happen when the power gets lost rather than the power gets misused.
Yes, that's the sad thing.
Because that comes before the losing.
Yeah, but that's politics, sadly. I mean, it's really...
That's just the way it works.
It's a sad but absolutely true statement that. That's really it.
All right, Justice, as always.
Can I just, guys, you know, can I just say the point you make about when should people speak? There's a gentleman who died. He died in the UK today. His name is Joel Joffe. Mr. Joffe is interesting. He became a lawyer in 1955. Young guy, got a degree from Wits in 1955. And he was a young lawyer. And in the early 60s, when Nelson Mandela was on trial for treason in Pretoria, Winnie Mandela went to Joel Joffe and said, I need a lawyer. I need someone to represent my husband. And there weren't many people who would represent Mandela and his comrades in the Rivonia trial. And Joel Joffe said, I'll go meet these guys. There were about 10 of them, I think, with Mandela. And he met them and he said, and he was quoted by the BBC in the 2000s. He gave an interview. He said, I have never met more amazing human beings. They were incredible. They were clever. They were committed. They were men of integrity. And I felt such a joy to be asked by them. Now, Joel Joffe went and defended them. They all got sent on, I think all of them were sent to jail for the rest of their lives. So he lost the case. And immediately after, the apartheid government at the time said, you either go to jail with the people you defended or you leave the country. And Joel Joffe, after having grown up in South Africa, after having got his quality, his whole life was here, was forced to leave South Africa. He was told, you leave this country. How dare you? And he tried to go to Australia, and the Australians said, we don't want you here. And he finally, in 1965, found a home and acceptance in the United Kingdom. He went on to become a very wealthy man. He started an insurance company. He did all sorts of things. And throughout the past 40, 50 years, he supported the struggle against apartheid. When the Mail and Guardian, which was the Weekly Mail, was started in 1985, he gave Anton Haber and others money to start that newspaper, which still lives today and exposes all this malfeasance as the Mail and Guardian. So I just wanted to say, you know, people think, oh no, it's not the point you make about when do people make their voices heard. Joel Joffe made his voice heard in 1963. He got kicked out of the country of his birth, had to look for a place, a home elsewhere. But he did it. He did it. And he never, as he said in interviews in the 2000s, he never regretted it. And he died this week. So I just want to say, voice is an amazing thing. And everyone has a voice. And people can use it. And not enough people use it. But this guy is an example of what, when other people say no. And imagine being white South African in the 1960s. Everyone is saying, how dare you? And Joel Joffe said, I will do it. He wasn't the only one. There were several of them. But he did it. And at great risk to himself. But today, here we are talking about him and not all the other people who kept quiet and said, oh, those communists, let them go to jail. He's known today as the man, the only man who defend Nelson Mandela and his comrades in 1963.
That's amazing.
Quite a life.
Well, that is Justice Malala's voice. You can catch it every Thursday on Active Central on the Burning platform, brought to you by Nando's. And well, Justice, your stuff is pretty timeless. So if you go into cliffcentral.com, you can find all his podcasts.
Maybe tomorrow we should do a call, guys,
about what happens today.
About what happens today.
I'm all in for that.
Yeah, sure.
Let's see what happens, and then we can have a chat with Sia this afternoon.
The lituation.
Thanks, Justice. Just going through the messages, there was a message here about the Guptas. Pam was saying that she has friends in India, and the Guptas are widely detested. So all those kind of other things about the fact that people thought the Guptas are still revered in India as being heroes, that was probably, fake news.
Mm.
Wow, a lot of messages here. Look, if you want to get the box, you can't just send the hashtag send me the box. You need to justify it. So videos, pictures, messages, whatever it may be. Migs, would you... Migs has a question for you, my buddy. Would you rather have lemon and herb justice or hot justice served on a platter?
Hot.
The easy one there. Hey guys, just wondering when part one of the morning show will be available. Ben's sports already up, but not part one. Please, Ben, please hijack the podcast. That'll all be coming out very soon. Guillermo, so easy on that. Right. Wow. Okay. A lot of messages. We'll get to those on the web after this. But we have the next in the installment of Gareth's Father's Day features. It is Brett and Keith Lindsay today. Now, Keith Lindsay is a bit of a hero from the broadcasting days, back when the national broadcaster, of course, there was quite sort of cutting edge, and you know, he was a real maverick in his day. And Brett also involved in the media industry. This is I think there's two more. So tomorrow there will be the Trevor Gumby and kids interview, right?
Yes.
Okay, that's going to be pretty exciting. So before we get to that, though, another one of Amanda's songs that she felt that she might have been conceived to. And it is, well, it's one of my favorite songs, so one of my favorite bands. And again, of course, because it's the 90s, because Amanda is just so young. Long intro.
Well, so this week, you know, after you have now officially come out and said that, you know, Sex and City is one of your favorite things, I'm wondering what the song is, if this is also your favorite. So, like... Okay, not the Spice Girls. I'm happy.
You can totally believe that a lot of people were conceived to this song. They're not spicing up your life, Sia. Is, of course, Oasis with Wonderwall. Gareth along with Keith and Brett Lindsay after this.
CliffCentral.com